Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg, the host of this fine program. With me, as always, it's David Ramil coming back from the game. He's in the car right now.
Yeah, that's the kind of dedication, you know. You can't keep me away from doing this wonderful podcast. And, you know, it's been an exciting night for the Heat. A very joyous locker room after an opening night victory. And a fine overall performance in the victory over the Orlando Magic. They're Kings State rivals.
Yeah, the Miami Heat beat the Orlando Magic on opening night 108-96, and it wasn't really that close until the Magic had a little run there in garbage time, so pretty decided victory there. And really the big theme of the night was how this team came together with teamwork and just seemed to play really well and with each other and off of each other. 27 assists to just 10 turnovers, that's a great rate. They got some high-quality looks near the basket. They shot 48.5% from the field. Those are just some stats right off the bat, but was that your impression as well?
Yeah, absolutely. They were very aggressive. They seemed like they were attacking the paint, just an overall pretty high energy level and certainly a lot greater of a connection than I anticipated. Although they did look shaky in some spots. I mean, maybe it was something about a live viewing of the game, and it's kind of hard to tell any kind of overall theme, but they didn't seem like they were shooting particularly well, although they were shooting very well in the painted area, but from the perimeter and you know, especially from the three-point line, they didn't shoot well at all. But you know, there were still some pretty good moments there tonight for Miami.
Yeah, I thought they got off pretty slow. I mean, they were down 53-50 at halftime. Really ended up taking control of the game in the third quarter, where they outscored the Magic 30-16, and went on a run in that a 10-2 run in that third quarter that really sprung the game wide open for them. But I agree with you. I thought they got off a little slow. I thought the second half they played much better than the first half. To me, in the first half, they weren't getting the looks that they wanted. I thought that they were trying to maybe force the ball into Hassan Whiteside a little too much, and I think Orlando did a good job taking that away from them early on in the game. You and I have talked about it. One of the keys to Miami's game plan this season seems like it's going to be trying to get Whiteside involved early, and Whiteside getting dominant early and controlling the pace or the tempo of the game there with that pick and roll. And the Magic seemed to really focus in on it. They put Serge Ibaka on Justice Winslow to start the game, and Ibaka was playing off of Winslow a lot, helping out with double teams on Whiteside in the post, so they took that away from them. The Heat eventually got their feet under them, figured out what they had to do, noticed that they started swinging the ball to the weak side a little bit more to try to get some more open looks. I think that's what helped them in the third quarter.
It was a surprising starting lineup with Luke Babbitt. I think we had heard some scuttle that maybe they might start Derek Williams. I think that's who we had anticipated filling in, but that was not the case. It seems like Spoelstra wants to go to that early lineup that we saw in the preseason, where he started Luke Babbitt at power forward, and that kind of threw off what Orlando was able to do defensively, I think, because obviously he's so much more perimeter bound than Winslow is, and so by having him at power forward, they kind of negated what Ibaka would have been able to do at the rim by he switched on to Winslow, and I think it was a matchup that he took advantage of somewhat as far as being able to use his quickness to get past Ibaka and use some of his playmaking ability and things like that.
Yeah, and he got off a little slow there too. I don't think he really knew how to attack Ibaka, and I think in the second quarter, he really started to get a handle for how you needed to attack Ibaka off the dribble and maybe get over to the weak side a little bit more to take him off of, you know, doubling Whiteside as closely as he was. One of the other surprising things, other than Babbitt starting, was the fact that Miami controlled the paint so much. I mean, we talked with Philip Rossman-Reich yesterday about what Orlando wanted to do and all their acquisitions. I know Bismack Biyombo didn't play, but Serge Ibaka is a vaunted rim protector. You know, Nikola Vucevic is not a good rim protector, but he's at least big. And he's given Miami problems in the paint in the past. So for Miami to outscore Orlando as much as they did, that to me was surprising, given that they weren't shooting the ball well from three-point range. They only made 4 of 16 threes tonight, and they, again, 74 points in the paint. From in the preseason, we had been seeing a lot of outside shooting, and tonight it was a lot of not really post-ups, but just drives to the rim by Dion Waiters and Goran Dragic. I thought Waiters did a really good job of, in the first half, really, when they were doubling Whiteside, taking advantage of some of that attention going towards Whiteside's way and being able to use an extra space or extra crease here and there, and did a really good job getting to the rim in that way, right?
Yeah, from what I saw of him, when his shot wasn't falling, he was still able to get past his first defender there. I'm trying to remember. He was blowing past either Jeff Green when they switched on him, mm-hmm. or... Yeah, at times, and he was actually a pretty solid playmaker there. There were a couple of moments there where he was able to drive to the rim, and he found either Hassan Whiteside or Willie Reed or somebody open underneath the rim, and Miami was just so much more aggressive. Again, you know, like you mentioned, not shooting well from outside, but just collapsing in the paint again and again, and it just broke down what Orlando was trying to do defensively. And that's, you know, from talking with Frank Vogel early today, he emphasized repeatedly how defensive identity was how they wanted to hang their hat, that he didn't want to ignore everything and every other aspect of the game. But obviously, with this bigger lineup, he wants to make defense the focus, and that wasn't obvious at all. I mean, Ibaka in particular looked really, really flat-footed. He got some shots later in the game, but early on, and particularly midway and through the third quarter when Miami started making a run, he just looked bad out there. And it was just Miami certainly took advantage.
Yeah, I don't want to overreact off one game. Ibaka looked really, really bad. I mean, he was minus 23. I mean, he was by far their worst player just by the plus-minus, and he looked like it on the floor. He's completely ineffective guarding anybody. Didn't really score a whole lot or really help them space the offense. I mean, he had 14 points, but on 6 of 17 shooting. I mean, that's not... You want Serge Ibaka to be more of an efficient player. You don't want him to be a volume shooter. I thought he really struggled in that game. Only 7 rebounds, and only 1 offensively, so not getting any extra possessions for him. I thought Nikola Vucevic played well for them. I liked what I saw from Aaron Gordon. He was another one that got off pretty slow. He ended up 5-11, but really caught up, you know, started to get going there in the second half. I was impressed with him. I wasn't impressed with Elfrid Payton. 4 of 12 shooting. Really didn't control the offense all that well. I thought when he was in, it Orlando's offense, and I know they have a lot of problems just with their personnel types and everything like that, but at some point, it comes down to the point guard trying to lead that offense, and it just looked disorganized when he was in there. Evan Fournier scored 20 points. He looked good, but yeah.
He did get to the free throw while Payton, that is. It seemed like he was, I think he hit the first, I want to say the first 8 or 9 free throws.
He was 8 for 8 in the game.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, so he was getting the line. I mean, there were some ticky-tack fouls that got called on Dragic, a recurring theme that we've seen throughout his short Miami tenure.
Yeah.
But, Payton, he did some decent things. He wasn't as glaring a weakness as he's been in the past. But Fournier...
I thought Payton guarded Dragic really well in the first half.
He did. Yeah, that's a good point. And you know, as far as Fournier is concerned, just... He looked like he was just not very impressive up there. And this is the guy they re-signed. They were really happy to have him back. And he's expected to space the floor for a team that really doesn't provide much perimeter shooting at this point. And he looked really bad up there. And I don't know if it was anything so much about what Miami did defensively so much as just having a really, really rough shooting night, which is
Took him 19 field goal attempts to score 20 points in 39 minutes. He's played more minutes than anybody else in the game. Fournier, to me, it looks like Orlando is counting on Fournier to be the lead scorer, and he's just not that guy. I mean, he's a maybe your third best scorer on a playoff team.
Yeah, that's fair. I think. Look, maybe we haven't seen what he's capable of, and I know that was part of the reason why they jettisoned Victor Oladipo to Oklahoma City, is they wanted to put all their dominoes in the Fournier basket.
There we go.
And yeah, I nailed it that time. The one game, again, you can't have too much of an overreaction. It did not work out for Orlando, and that's to Miami's. That's something that they really counted on there, I guess, and they really were able to thrive from it. So let's move over to the other side of the ball, I think, and focus more on what Miami did well rather than what Orlando didn't do well.
Sure, and we're going to give out the power forward belt, as we always do. We're going to talk about some spotlight players, and the Heat will... So this was the first time, I think, since 2010, though, that Miami opened the season on the road, and... Uh-huh. They'll have their home opener on Friday against the Hornets. And if you want tickets to that, where else are you going to go other than SeatGeek? SeatGeek is the smartest way. It is the easiest way to find tickets for any NBA game, any Miami Heat game. If you want to see up close and in person this season, there's nothing like being in the arena for the moments, for the Hassan Whiteside dunks, for the Goran Dragic dunks that he might have. You never know when those are going to happen. I mean, for Justice Winslow's flexing, you want to be there in person to see this new impressive team in person. Luckily for you, we have a promo code. It's LOHEAT, LOHEAT. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. With SeatGeek, you're always getting the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. Giving you a big green dot for a good deal, a smaller red dot for a not so great deal, and they're going to give you a grade just like that based on tickets. It makes it all easy for you. You don't have to go to, 14 different ticket sites. Just, hey, I want to go to, what's that commercial? The Jacksons, how did they get tickets?
Oh, right, yeah.
They're probably using SeatGeek. That's what the NBA doesn't want to tell you. They're probably using SeatGeek. Because that's the best way. People are going to be like, how did you get that ticket? I use SeatGeek. So again, get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter the promo code LOHEAT, that's LOHEAT. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your very first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LOHEAT today. All right, power forward belt. So Luke Babbitt got the start, which was interesting. We've talked about that already. James Johnson came in at with 4 minutes to go left in the first quarter. Luke Babbitt didn't return until the very end of the second quarter. So he rested for more than 12 minutes, which is a very, very long stretch, longer than any starter rested during this game. It was clear that Luke Babbitt wasn't playing well. I was manually tracking unofficial numbers, his defensive lapses, because this has been the issue with Babbitt, and I had two within the first, when he came out in the 4 minute mark, so within the first 8 minutes he had two. Just, that's a lot. You know, two is what you'd expect for a game from a wing player, just bad defensive lapses where he fouled a shooter on one play because he just played off of him and he had to close out on him too hard. And another one where he just let a guy slip right by him. So he wasn't playing well. He wasn't hitting his threes, and he rested the rest of that first quarter and almost the entire second quarter. And James Johnson came and played really, really well. I'm going to, before we dive into the specifics, James Johnson, 11 points, 6 assists, 2 rebounds, just 1 turnover for a guy that's not really known for dribbling. He still had 6 assists and 1 turnover. That's a great rate. 4 of 8 on field goals, 2 of 4 on three-pointers, hit as many threes as Luke Babbitt. And Babbitt needed 6 attempts to hit 2 of them. So ended up playing 25 minutes more than Babbitt's 19 minutes. So James Johnson, you got the power forward belt today, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, and again, Derek Williams not playing at all tonight. Surprising move by Spoelstra there, considering we thought he'd probably get the starting nod, but he went with Babbitt. He looked really, really shaky early on, to the point where I thought he wasn't going to come back into the game. I thought Spoelstra would keep enough flexibility in his lineup there where he, I thought maybe he'd just sit him out to start the third quarter and just energized the lineup there by starting James Johnson again in the third. But no, he went with Babbitt. You know, he did catch a little fire later on in the game, but James Johnson was just really good. He seemed really comfortable.
Yeah.
Something about I saw him at shoot around today, and there was he's certainly taken a bigger leadership role than I expected. I know that you and I had talked about Udonis having it, but I think James Johnson's experience and kind of like a I just don't give a damn attitude. Like you could see him out there during shoot around and up close at the game. He was talking to Goran Dragic when Dragic was getting heated after a particularly bad foul call. He was talking to guys, clapping off the bench when he was sitting, just doing all the little things that you'd expect out of him. He wants to play a leadership role, and he's just really, really positive. He brought the ball down occasionally. He spotted up in the corner, hit a couple threes that way. Looked really, really solid. But, yeah, the playmaking was what really stood out. He was just trying to find guys. He was cutting to the hoop, and then, again, either somebody like Reed or Hassan was collapsing on the paint, and he would just dish off to them and get an easier bucket. That's what, and that's what led to a number of easy, you know, shots right there in the paint.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the facilitating. He's not known as a shooter. He's not going to make 50% of his three-pointers every night. It might be the only time he does that for the rest of the season. I don't know. But that the ability to facilitate and attack the defense with your pass is another way to space the defense. And sure. He really was able to help in that way. He set really good screens. I mean, he was just all over the court. He was doing all the little things that Luke Babbitt can't really do. And Babbitt's three-point shooting and his spacing was very valuable. I mean, the team played well with Luke Babbitt in. He was a plus 12. The team was even. They were plus zero with James Johnson in. So that the team does benefit when Luke Babbitt's in there just from his presence as a three-point shooter. But yeah. Babbitt does have a way of just... He got hot. I think it was the third quarter. He hit both of his threes in the third quarter. And he just had like a few minutes where he was hot. And then James Johnson just was... But James Johnson was better overall and better after that. And I think Babbitt has a way of doing that. It might just be like 6 or 7 minutes where he's just... Everything's going in for him. And then outside of that, you know, he gets blown by on defense. He gets out of rhythm. He doesn't know where he's... on offense, he doesn't really know where he's quite going. I saw him get in guys' ways a couple of times, which is kind of interesting for a three-point shooter. You think just stand around the perimeter, but I think when the team is trying to swing the ball and move, and you have guys like Dragic and Waiters and Tyler Johnson trying to attack the basket and kick out as much as they do, and all of those guys have a way of like dancing around for a while before they actually go and attack the rim, I think Babbitt gets a little confused. I don't want to draw too many conclusions just from a couple plays, but James Johnson did just seem much more comfortable in that role.
I saw from Babbitt that he was, maybe he's not, you know, trying not to settle too much for the three-point shot, even though that's clearly what his biggest strength is. But I saw him try to attack the paint on a number of occasions, even when he was wide open from three-point range. He just tried to take Ibaka off the dribble, and I think he was successful once, I want to say. I can recall at least once where he actually drove to the hoop and was successful finishing at the rim, but otherwise, it's just, you know, it was an attempt, it was an effort, good solid effort on his part, but just didn't work out as well. But you're right, I mean, he does, you know, look, there's going to be moments when that shot is falling earlier rather than later where we're looking to him and saying, well, you know what, he's a really good option for Miami. I saw, you know, Deion Waiters looked for him from the perimeter. Goran Dragic was looking for him. You know, they recognized that that the perimeter shooting is an obvious strength of Babbitt's, and they're going to keep going to him. And you know, so long as, like you said, he's out there, he's going to represent a threat from the, you know, 3-point range. And so I think that's a plus for Miami to have on their roster.
Yeah, I don't expect him to go 3 for 10 from the field every night. You're right. He did force up some weird shots, like almost as if he didn't want to just be a 3-point shooter. But like, dude, that's what you are. And you shouldn't be taking 10 shots. Like, Luke Babbitt really shouldn't be taking 10 shots in a game. That's too many shots for him. He should be taking 6 to 8 shots a game, and they should probably, you know, 75% of them be 3-pointers.
At least.
Yeah, at least. Maybe the other 10% is a long 2 that he screwed up on or something. Do you think this means James Johnson gets a start? I almost like James Johnson coming off the bench. Is that energy guy? It almost... He seems more comfortable in that role. I wasn't all that impressed with him when he was starting in the preseason.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Again, I think that Spoelstra has to go to Derek Williams at some point because I think he just provides so much more versatility. It's not like he's as reliable a shooter as Babbitt is, but I mean he can shoot from outside. He can also attack the rim. He's also a pretty solid ball handler, playmaker, etc. And I think that versatility is a strength that Spoelstra would seemingly count on. But I guess you're probably right that it's probably better just to have a guy like him. If you're going to go inside outside, with Hassan Whiteside clearly dominating, then it's probably better to keep Babbitt out there during those moments to start the game and then bring James Johnson off of the bench as a kind of energy guy, somebody who can do a lot of little things. And unfortunately, that just leaves Derek Williams out of the mix.
Yeah, Babbitt also, with that starting unit, might be the only way he gets minutes because I don't think you can bring him off the bench. Because at what point you could bring him off the bench as a three-point shooter, but then you're probably pairing him up with Willie Reed, and that does not sound like a good defensive unit. I mean, Willie Reed had a strong game. We'll talk about him a little bit later, but he's not as consistent, and he's not the defensive presence that Whiteside is, obviously. So I like having James Johnson as a little bit more of a consistent defender on the second unit, as well as the energy he brings on the offensive side. Babbitt, at least when he's bracketed there by Whiteside and Winslow, his defense isn't as big of an issue. And it really, he had two defensive lapses. I don't think the Magic scored on those lapses, because Whiteside was on the rim from one of them, and, he ended up just fouling the guy on the other one. But that he ended up fouling the guy because I can't remember who it was, but he couldn't drive to the rim because Whiteside was standing there. So he did a step back jumper, and Babbitt just closed out a little too hard and ended up fouling him. But, I kind of agree with you. I think that this rotation, the way it looks, I mean, Spoelstra went with 9 players in the first quarter. He played all 9 of his guys, and he played those 9 guys for the entire game. The way this shakes out, it looks like he's going to have 2 of these power forwards in the rotation. And it was Luke Babbitt and James Johnson tonight, and then Justice Winslow played some 4 as well. It looks like those are going to be the guys that play a power forward. There might not be enough minutes for Derek Williams or the third power forward on this roster, whoever it ends up being on a night-to-night basis. I think it's just going to be a 2 power forward rotation.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to predict Spoelstra's rotations. I think we've seen that in the past from him, even when he had a more superstar-laden roster. He's always been a little unpredictable, I guess. Some nights he goes to guys early, sometimes he doesn't go to them at all, and especially with a lineup like this, where so many different players do so many different little things but don't necessarily excel at many of them. He doesn't have a clear-cut superstar there, I think, aside from maybe Whiteside at this point. So you just wonder, maybe it'll be predicated on a nightly basis. I think he mentioned that in Shoot Around today, that his lineups are going to be flexible, that he's going to keep going to guys at different times, and it's going to be based on matchups, and for whatever reason, he thought that this Magic lineup was good to exploit with a guy like Babbitt out there, not necessarily with a guy like Williams. So we'll have to monitor that. Maybe he'll change it around. Maybe what we saw in the preseason of kind of keeping that starting lineup flexible is something we'll continue to see. And I mean, I'm certainly he's going to change the starting shooting guard rotation once Josh Richardson comes back from injury. So we'll just have to keep monitoring that.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if he was starting Luke Babbitt because he needed a 3-point shooting presence. I mean, that is certainly why he started with Babbitt. There's no other reason to play Babbitt. But
sure.
I wonder if he started him because Richardson's not in. And when Richardson comes in, who's a bona fide 3-point shooter, does that power forward position become an area where you might not need a 3-point shooter there? And you do want a James Johnson or a Derek Williams, maybe a more versatile player, because now all of a sudden Richardson is a starting shooting guard. You have that true 3-point shooting presence. Or you double down on that 3-point shooting, you double down on that space, which I think they could have used in the first quarter. Like we were talking about, not a lot of room to operate in the paint when the Magic were trying to take away that Whiteside pick and roll. Maybe having both of them in there, I don't know. It's everybody affects the other person in the starting lineup. I have no idea who's going to end up starting more games at power forward, but we'll keep an eye on it. Let's get to our spotlight player. Number one, it's got to be Hassan Whiteside. Let's go with his stat line: 18 points, 14 rebounds, 4 of which were offensive, 4 blocks. He had an assist. 9 of 16 from the floor. Zero of four free throws. I want to talk about that in a little bit. In 31 minutes, I know you had a chance to talk with Eric Spoelstra at the end of that, at the end of the game, and here's the audio for that.
He was enjoying the game and the competition, even when he was on the bench, and that's important for this team. But we need him to be great, and he was bad in the third quarter. Really anchored our defense. It ignited everybody else to be a little bit tougher on pick and rolls, to be able to challenge a little bit more, knowing that he was back there, not only to challenge at the rim, but also the rebound. But I liked it. He had to battle a little bit of frustration in the first quarter with a couple fouls. I like it when he has to go through those emotions and find a way to come back and impact the game, and he really impacted the win.
So that's Spoelstra on Whiteside's impact on the game. Whiteside also really energetic off the bench. I mean, he was just having a good time.
Yeah. It was impressive, I think. And, a lot of the Magic beat writers, I guess, that haven't really followed what Whiteside's done, they were just, as we had talked about earlier in the preseason, they kept commenting on how Whiteside just looked so much bigger out there. Even with a seven-footer, a legit seven-footer like Vucevic, or a big guy like Ibaka, he was just so much bigger than everybody. He was just so dominant. He was snatching every rebound with ease. There were a couple shots there that he just completely altered there. He was just such a presence at the rim, and you just think that's going to be the case moving forward. Now, he did take a couple bad shots, one of which led to a pretty heated reaction from Eric Spoelstra. I think there was, at least from what I could tell from my vantage point, he caught the ball, I think I want to say Tyler Johnson dumped it to him from the wing, and then all of a sudden Whiteside was out there, was the shot clock was winding down, and with Vucevic on him, and he decided to unleash an 18-19 footer. That was a bad decision on his part, and it was the second one of the game too. It's just something, we've seen it in the past. You want him to try and avoid that shot because obviously it's not a strong suit. And maybe he felt like he had to do it because the shot clock was winding down, but I think there was more to it than that. I think that's probably what led to that reaction for Spoelstra, because it was at a time when Miami didn't have a comfortable lead. In fact, I think they may have been down at that point in time. So anyway, he seemed to collect himself much more after that. And then, there was what we had seen, I think, last season, where he kind of came on really, really strong in the third quarter. And I think we saw that again today, where he became much more dominant. I think I want to say at least two of his blocks came in the third, including a very emphatic slam of Elfrid Payton, I believe it was, where he drove to the hoop and he caught it so easily and just pushed it down to the ground. It was just absolutely demoralizing.
And then looked back at him and smiled.
Yeah. It was unbelievable. And I think, the Magic are not an offensive powerhouse. They're going to have limitations. But when they see a presence like Whiteside in there, I think that's going to change a lot of how they attack the basket. And that's going to be something that is going to be a recurring theme for every team, because I think Whiteside's just at a point where he's much more comfortable. Now, I will say this. There were a couple of times there where Whiteside was really, really good on pick and roll defense, where he was switched off on defense and he got the perimeter guy. I want to say he shut down Fournier at one point, maybe even Payton. And it was things that there were things I just hadn't seen from him in the past. It's always been an issue. It's something that other teams have exploited very easily. He was exploited in that way during the playoffs, unfortunately. But he looked really, really good in that regard today. And, obviously with a guy like Vucevic, who can shoot from the perimeter, it's a little harder for him to defend the pick-and-roll situation. But he did a pretty good job of it overall tonight, I'd say.
Absolutely. That's a really great note. And another thing I was keeping track of for Whiteside, my unofficial numbers here, I'm keeping track of his assist opportunities. So where he passed the ball, but the player missed the shot. He passed the ball, but the shot was made. And then I gotta think of a name for this, but where the pass was optimal, but he didn't pass the ball. So times where he should have passed it, but he just put up a bad shot instead. And so I had one pass where the shot was missed, and that was on Tyler Johnson. Got a nice pass to Tyler Johnson, and he ended up missing a bunny at the rim. And then another pass where the shot was made, and I don't think that the last one where he was on the perimeter and he passed it to the inside, who made that shot? Was that Tyler Johnson?
I want to say it was, yeah.
Yeah, and so That one I counted, but I know you and I, the thing that we're looking for from Whiteside is passing out of the post, not necessarily passing into the paint, and that's what the situation was there. And then the two times where the pass was optimal, one time where he just had the ball. This thing that, you know, the common sight of Whiteside, he has the ball in the post, he's double teamed, he throws up a shot, probably should have passed it out. And the other time where what you just talked about, ended up getting the ball at 18 feet. He did have a couple seconds where he could have thrown, found somebody to pass it to, but nobody was really moving around him. And I think that's what Eric Spoelstra was more mad about, was that they passed Whiteside the ball and then nobody moved. They just kind of stared at him as like the last 3 seconds of the shot clock wound down, and Whiteside had to take that shot. So I kind of give him like 1.5 there for optimal passing situations in which he didn't pass.
Okay.
So at least that was my takeaway from that play. But overall, like, that's, you know, he did have an assist, which is, that's a, like, the assist, right? That's, like, worth 20
like
assists
it.
For Whiteside. And yeah, just a really strong stat line all around. Another guy that we want to talk about a little bit more is Justice Winslow. Loaded up the box score, 15 points on 7 of 15 shooting, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks, plus 15 on the court. In 34 minutes. A really good all-around game for Justice Winslow.
Yeah, no doubt. I will say this, though. I was looking at him pre-game, and just the way he was shooting the ball, the mechanics looked a little smoother, but you could kind of tell what he would when he would miss a shot, and then he would miss another one, and then he would miss another one. And you could just see him get steadily more demoralized with each shot attempt. And this is just in pregame, and then unfortunately it kind of extended out during the game itself, where his perimeter shooting was pretty bad. I can't recall that he
missed both
hit.
Of his three-pointers. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know, I'm sure he took a couple long twos there, and it's just, it did not look very fluid for him, unfortunately. I mean, the mechanic speaking, but unfortunately the results were the same. He did have some, he did have several nice finishes at the rim. You know, he was able to get past the athletic big like Aaron Gordon. He was able to get past Ibaka when he switched on him. There were some good matchups there that you thought might have been a little bit more difficult. But again, you know, Winslow's speed, his first step really were prominent there, and he was able to really take advantage. And that's, I thought, you know, that might just be the strength of his game. Look, you know, we had a pretty successful era for 13 years with a certain player who could not shoot well from the perimeter. And I think that might be the case this year, you know, with Winslow as well. So we'll just have to keep monitoring that. And as long as he's able to get past an original and first defender and finish at the rim with ease and continue to make others as well, I think that's going to be a strong suit that Miami can exploit in the future.
Yeah, again, just one of those guys that is able to affect the game in so many areas. And he's really fortunate in that way, because you can't take him off the floor because he's able to make a positive impact in so many spots. I know that he wants to take a step forward with that jumper. We really didn't see that much of an improvement with it. He shot 36% from three-point range in the preseason, but it's preseason. Guys aren't closing out as hard. They're not playing as great defense. It's a small sample size. He wasn't taking that many threes in the first place. So I'm with you. I think he needs to be a little bit more patient. And it sounds like from what you're seeing in shoot-arounds and stuff and during the game that maybe he's trying to force it a little too much. I will say, he did have a nice step back too, where he got his feet set and his form looked nice. It just, the ball just didn't go in. And that was in semi-transition there, in which a lot of times you can really tell a person's natural shooting form in transition or semi-transition or off the dribble, and he looked good. He looked good. That was one shot. It's very, like you're saying, it's very inconsistent. His shot is different with every shot. It looks different every time, but
yeah, and that's such an important part of becoming a good shooter, is just repetition, muscle memory, etc. You know, you can have a wonky ass looking shot so long as you keep taking that wonky shot each and every time, and eventually those things will fall and you'll just get into a more comfortable rhythm. But for him, you know, like you said, he changes it up, and he just needs to get into a point where he's much more consistent in his motion. And look, you know, they brought in the shot doctor. On the other side of the ball, Orlando was, you know, they've had some shooting woes as well. Even a guy who, like Mario Hezonja, is working with a shooting coach. And this is a guy who's supposed to be a much more natural shooter, and he's been struggling with his shot here in the NBA. So It happens. You can't, this is a guy who's 20 years old. There's still time for him to develop that shot. I know we'd like to see quicker returns on the investment, but that might just be something that we have to wait a little while to see.
Yeah, I also, the team in general shot 25% from three-point range, 4 to 16. Right. So when other guys when Josh Richardson returns and guys like Waiters, his three-pointers are going in, if Luke Babbitt's threes can start going in more consistently, I think that will pick up energy and Winslow will feed off of that rhythm and be a little bit better. And I think if the whole team in general is better at three-point shooting, which are good three-point shooters on this team, then right. Winslow, I think players tend to get energy that way, and all of a sudden his shots become more open and more in rhythm of the offense, and maybe those things start going down a little bit more. But we're nitpicking on his shot. He ended up scoring 15 points on 7 of 15 shooting, a pretty efficient overall, especially in the second half where he really started to go after the rim more aggressively, had a few nice dunks. Thought he played really, really well overall, so I don't want to nitpick too much. Again, just loaded up the box score, did everything that we want with those four assists, got everybody involved.
Did he get to the free throw line much?
No, just one free throw. We do need to see more free throws, but those refs were horrible tonight.
Okay.
That Whiteside, that goaltend they called on Whiteside was garbage. I give no credit to the refs.
Okay. It's hard when you're in an Orlando environment to kind of gauge it, although there was a pretty large contingent of Heat fans, as they always are there.
I know that the refs usually give a little bit of an advantage to the home team, but the Heat had just as many fans there as Orlando, it seemed like, at least on TV. Gotta give both of them the advantage.
Yeah, I didn't really quite see that. But, certainly it's something to keep monitoring as far as Winslow's ability to get to the rim and possibly draw more fouls too. And that's, that was a problem that I saw with all the people that we've seen over the years from Wade. It's just the ability to get to the rim. You want him to not necessarily duplicate that, at least to try to come close to those numbers. And then that would be a big asset moving forward for him, because then you have to respect that. If he's going to be able to get to the rim, as we saw tonight, and you don't necessarily respect his outside shot, then you have to be able to get to the line occasionally to continue to supplement your scoring output. So that's something we're going to have to keep looking for.
Yeah, just like the comparison you made to a certain somebody earlier, that's how he made up for his lack of three-point shooting for the entirety of his career. But all right, let's start to wrap this thing up. But before, let's get to our little notes section here. I thought Willie Reed had a strong game. Spoelstra, you mentioned to me before we started recording here, had some good words about Willie Reed. Before you get to that, 10 points, 5 of 6 5 of 6 shooting, 10 points, 6 rebounds, had an assist, had a block, all of that in 17 minutes. And like you said, Spoelstra had some good words about him.
Yeah, he called him the most improved player since the start of training camp. And I think from what you and I had discussed last time we brought up Reed, I think that's a pretty fair assessment, because, in one national game, I can't recall exactly who it was. Maybe it was against the Magic in that first matchup. He looked a little shaky. We talked about his screen setting. We talked about some of the things that he wasn't doing particularly well. But since then, he's kind of come on and developed a little bit more offensively, got into a much more comfortable rhythm. And we saw a lot of things from him that, we expect to see from him, and that looked very duplicative of what we've seen from Whiteside. Finishing at the rim, they were tossing him a lob. He was able to finish with a nice hook shot over a taller defender. He just looked really active out there. Not much of a passer or anything like that, but he was rebounding. It seemed like I know that Miami clearly had the rebounding edge of Orlando. I don't have the numbers in front of me now as I'm driving, but
52 to 44.
Yeah, it actually felt a lot more than that. It's pretty weak to say that, but that was the reality. That it just seemed like every time either team missed a shot, Miami was there to gobble up the rebound, and they were able to press as a result, because they were just able to push the pace that way. And Reed was a big part of that. He would grab the rebound, and all of a sudden Orlando would just sag off, and they just couldn't, figure out a way to defend this team as they pushed the pace there. And it was just, he was a big part of that. So it's good to see him being able to come off the bench, and that there isn't as much of a significant drop off. As we expect, Whiteside is going to be the focal point of this team moving forward. You don't want this team to collapse completely without him in the lineup. On those nights, and they will invariably come when he gets into foul trouble, you want to be able to bring somebody in. If he gets injured, who knows what might happen. You might have to go to a smaller lineup. You might have to go to Josh McRoberts if he ever gets healthy, etc. but you want Reed to be able to come in and kind of, you know, keep some of that consistency going, particularly in the offensive end. There's still some limitations defensively, but I feel pretty confident that, you know, his athleticism will be able to translate on that side of the ball.
Yeah, as long as he stays near the rim, he's good. He did take a long two that was ill-advised, that just completely whiffed, did not make it even close. That was a bad shot, but he didn't take another shot like that, or a shot even close to that for the rest of the game, because I think he got enough of an eye from Spoelstra being like, do not do that again.
Right.
And to piggyback on your point about the rebounds, 52-44 on the offensive glass, 16 rebounds, offensive rebounds for Miami, 14 offensive rebounds for Orlando. So really didn't out offensive rebound them, but every time more than what Orlando was able to do when Miami was got the offensive rebound, they had a putback for a dunk. It was either Willie Reed or Whiteside or Winslow being able to take advantage of it, where I don't think Orlando was able to do it. And I think that's one of the reasons why it did look like Miami just dominated on the glass so much more. I think they were just much more opportunistic. Speaking of opportunistic, Willie Reed to me was open for dump offs. Just another, he's never going to create his own shot. He's not the rim roller that Whiteside is, but he's an opportunistic guy. I've compared him to Chris Anderson. He's going to be open for dump offs. He's going to cut along the baseline under the rim. I think he just has a knack of finding open space in tight quarters under the rim, and that to me is how he's going to score. We also got a look at Miami's closing lineup, which I know has been a question. Goran Dragic, Tyler Johnson, Deion Waiters, Justice Winslow, his son Whiteside. So Winslow moves at the four in the closing lineup. You and I thought that would be the case. We got to see that in person. It'll be interesting to see how that varies when Josh Richardson comes in. It might be Dragic, Josh Richardson, Waiters, Winslow, Whiteside, or maybe Dragic, Tyler Johnson, Richardson, Winslow, Whiteside. And, I mean, I don't think this would be the case, but we did see that Spoelstra would... He was open to benching Goran Dragic at the end of games last season if he wasn't having a strong game. That might be the case again this season. I know the context of what Dragic was able to do this year is much different than what the team was kind of doing last season. But... again, we saw the closing lineup. My point being, I don't know if this is going to be the closing lineup every night. Spoelstra does have a knack for basically just going with the five hot hands at the end of games.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, a couple other points. I did see Pat Riley and Andy Ellisberg there. When I texted that to you earlier today, both you and I suspected that maybe... they might be there kind of looking at the team, scouting ahead, and possibly making potential personnel moves in the future. I don't know. Riley looked particularly happy after the game, so that was good. Ellisberg, as always, looks very serious and solemn, and it's always
head
to whatever moves and salary cap machinations he can pull off. That was one thing. And then secondly, your guy, Rodney Magruder, he just looked spectacular. I mean, a lot of the Magic guys kept commenting on his constant energy up at that level. He was just grabbing rebounds away from bigger defenders. He was able to attack the rim. He drew a three-point foul at one point, and that was really, really good. It was at a time in the game when I think Orlando was making a smaller comeback. I think I want to say they had cut down the lead to 10 or so. Anyway, he was able to hit the free three throws and keep Miami, help them extend their lead and keep them ahead. And he was just really, 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 really good, I think.
And one other note that I had, I agree, Rodney Magruder was spectacular. I do wonder how much he'll play when Richardson returns, and Wayne Ellington was also out for that game. So I wonder how those minutes trickle down. Magruder was fighting for the 15th roster spot, so you would imagine that Ellington and Richardson, of course, will get playing time over him, but it'll be interesting to see how they go. One other note that I had, Miami missed their first 7 three-pointers. So we talked about how they didn't shoot well from three-point range, 4 of 16, but they missed their first 7. So after that, they made 4 of 9, which is not bad. So they started to heat up from beyond the arc after that, after missing their first 7. All right, well, that's all we have for today. Thanks again to our sponsor, SeatGeek, the friendliest and smartest way to buy and sell tickets. Use the promo code LOHEAT to get $20 after your first SeatGeek purchase. And whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, Audioboom, TuneIn, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. And if you aren't subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Rate us, review us, say nice things about us, and we'll catch you next time. See you, David.
All right. Take care, Wes.